Now, Richard, how many meetings did they have then? We talked about two. Did they have any more than that?
In terms of full meetings of everybody, there were the two.
At what meeting did they basically ratify everything? The second?
The second meeting is where the agreement was ratified and brought to conclusion. When we were talking last time, we talked about the elements of the deal on both sides. I can speak about what happened after they went their separate ways in terms of following through on the agreement, which in some ways is the rest of the story. The Star Nations kept their side of the agreement. They're honorable people and operate from very high metaphysical and spiritual principles. The same cannot be said of the four governments involved. There have been firings on Star Visitor craft from time to time, and one of the counselors said to me that the humans say, well, it was a mistake or a misidentification or human error. We didn't mean to do it, but of course, it's happened and did. One of them was even captured by astronauts who were in orbit in a space shuttle where a neutral particle beam weapon beam comes up from the Earth towards a Star Visitor craft that's hovering at the edge of atmosphere, and it makes a radical right turn at the last moment.
Yeah,
and
I think we've seen that video.
Yeah, a lot of people have seen that. You know, that's just documentation that the deal was violated and that they've continued to fire on them. There, of course, have been various reports of downed UFOs since the 60s, and those were no accidents. It was deliberate shootings because these cabal-type folks want to grab these vehicles and tear them apart and back engineer them and find out what makes them tick and take that technology and reproduce it so that they can have advanced weapon systems to rule the world with. They've continued to ambush and kidnap and interrogate and torture star beings when they capture them from shot down craft or in some cases using energy signature detection. Intercept them on the ground on the way to interact with a human. They've misused the flight altitude restrictions on Star Nation's craft to continue the UFO cover-up for decades, and because the UFOs were generally required to fly very high in the sky, the government has said, well, all you saw up there was ice crystals or inversion layers or migratory geese. The technology and science information that the Star Nation shared was appropriated by cabal scientists and taken to their labs and re-engineered into things like psychotronic mind-influencing weapons using some of the advanced physics and energy information to create scalar energy artificial earthquake devices.
Richard, weren't we concerned that they were going to blow us up if we were trying to shoot down their craft? I mean, they must have had weaponry and technology far superior to ours.
Yes, but what the four governments came to understand is that the Star Nations are very strictly ethically bound by the 11 universal laws and the 11 spiritual laws of the cosmos. And these principles do not allow them to be anything but truthful and honorable, and when they give their word, they follow it through, and they're not going to get down in the gutter and play at the level of the cabal just because that's the level the cabal's playing at. And so there was a kind of a mismatch ethically between one side and the other in this. They went on to do things like misusing the genetic samples that these various Star Nation races had to give them to do gene splicing and cloning of hybrid human super soldier clones. My friend Dr. Michael Wolf, before his death, told me about that. He was in that project for a while before he figured out what the Army was really trying to do and washed his hands of it.
Yeah, it really plagued him, didn't it, once he found out what was happening.
Yeah, when people see that that recent movie out about clone super soldiers, that's Hollywood imitating reality. This project did take place. They've misused the information about which humans were being visited so that they could follow up on this whenever a star visitor visited a human with a rogue cabal paramilitary unit that would kidnap these people, drug them, interrogate them, abuse them, and then hypnotize them to have a false memory that all the bad things that happened to them were done by evil aliens, so these people end up scratching their heads saying, I remember some good contacts, but it looks like something bad happened the other night, and it was really humans using drugs and hypnosis to mess their heads up so that they would begin to fear and avoid star visitor contact.
Now, the primary mission, Richard, by these star nations, of course, was what? One of being benevolent. They wanted to help planet Earth by genetically altering and also doing the reincarnation work?
Well, that's part of it. They see Earth itself as a living being, a somewhat sacred being, if you will, in the kind of Native American consciousness way, as a precious life form that cannot ethically be ignored or allowed to go become trashed. Some of our own scientists, like James Loveland, are beginning to talk about the same thing, the Gaia theory, that Earth is a conscious web of living systems that operates under a high unitary principle, and we are just part of that. That the star nations certainly share that kind of consciousness, and therefore, in their view, a planet is a terrible thing to waste, and didn't want to see Earth trashed by its allegedly intelligent inhabitants. But beyond that, they were concerned about all the other species, plants and animals, and uppermost humans, because we are highest in the intelligent and spiritual order.
At least
among
we're supposed
creatures.
To be.
And, supposed to be. And so their mission was to work with humans, to get humans mobilized. And they spent many of their communication hours with people on environmental lectures about, reversing the damage we're doing to the Earth. But also, in terms of human-to-human contact, that we need to change our priorities, not let materialism guide us, not being such a competitive, aggressive society, being more concerned about our fellow humans and not sitting by idly while people somewhere else in the world starve to death, that we, start to treat each other like family. And they wanted to help our society reach its potential as an intelligent, spiritual, high-minded, metaphysically aware, psychically endowed society operating its highest and best potential. They have said that they've made a kind of special exception for Earth. They've seen many, many planetary civilizations over the history of the star nations, and Earth is at a very dire straits right now. And normally, when they see a society that's as taken over by the bad guys, the cabal, the shadow government, the New World Order, whatever you want to call it, as our Earth society is, where the bad guys have control of government, media, finances, all the basic power structures, they just say, well, too far gone, move on to something that can be saved, but they've made an exception because they see us at a very delicate teeter-totter and that there's potential to turn it around. That's why they poured this effort in. And to kind of jump to something I've gotten as a kind of update since the original communication, they now believe that we can make it, that we will be able to correct the division in society between those who are ego-oriented and those who are oriented towards respect for Source, God, and, you know, the sacred in nature, whatever you want to call it.
Hey, Richard, tell me about your clinical close encounter therapist group, because I think that's important to distinguish these other people who've been working with you on this project. Because, you know, I've got a camp of people out here that think, oh, my God, this guy's off his rocker. I want you to elaborate a little bit more on the group and the telepathy that you say came to you.
Yeah. Well, the Academy of Clinical Close Encounter Therapists were not the group principally involved in this telepathic communication. It was another set of individuals that I've worked with on in the last year, and corroborated by my associate Marion McNeil and the Star Visitor she works with, and corroborated by Chief Golden Eagle, the keeper of the Star Traditions for the Yankton Sioux, Dakota Sioux. So I have multiple sources, if you will, that corroborates that this information is correct. It's not just a single source. But for those who are very materialistic and physical oriented and, you know, don't believe anything unless they have some videotape, it's a little hard to videotape telepathic incoming communication.
Sure, but you can understand how people will hear this. And
absolutely. And, you know, a year ago, if you told me I was going to be getting this kind of communication at this level of material, I'd have been dumbfounded and dubious myself. But you have to be inside it and start to get some corroboration. I've also had an Army intelligence retired officer tell me that I've got it right too. So I've got multiple sources that this stuff isn't just you know, somebody had too many beans for dinner. But I can appreciate for people who are used to a very physical, scientific, in that quotation mark sense of the word, that this is a little hard for them to accept as an authentic stream of knowing. But it is here, and I think as people begin to see what's happening in our society over the time ahead, it will become more corroborated by the flow of events. I'd like to move a little ahead to a couple of important updates that have come in the last several days. A week ago, I got an update from the counselor for the Watchers, one of the principal Star Nation High Council spokespersons who presents this information, and he indicated that Star Nations now view the 1964 agreement as invalid.
Why?
Well, I made the case that according to international law, on three bases, that this agreement is invalid. First basis is a doctrine called ultra vires, meaning these the people who entered into the agreement were not really legitimate. I argue that USSR and China were police states, and there were not free elections. That David Rockefeller was never elected and was not in a position to officially speak for the American people.
Well, why didn't they go straight to the United Nations, Richard?
Well, at this point, this was not anything more than a stopgap and attempt to get a ceasefire, basically. And they needed to get more of the primary mission accomplished of reaching people and raising consciousness. They weren't ready to do the ta-da bit, land on the White House lawn, or show up at the UN for a formal worldwide meeting of cultures. They just wanted to get a ceasefire while they finished, over the last 42 years, they're getting enough of their primary mission done that there's a whole generation of conscious people rising up now and growing up among us. That was uppermost. So they just dealt with the four governments that were doing the shooting and cut a deal with them to get them to turn off the weapons so that they could get their mission accomplished. The other reasons are misunderstanding and fraud. If you enter agreement and you've got your fingers crossed, and it's very clear that as soon as the agreement is over, the governments, including the United States, continue to fire on vehicles when they felt like it. There's another international law, legal doctrine of peremptory norms, that an agreement's null and void if there's a violation of basic human right norms. And certainly intending to use the information on starseed incarnates and human star kids, starseed hybrids, to misuse that information to identify them, reach them, and terrorize and harm their rights invalidates us. So on all these bases, they feel the agreement is invalid. And a fourth reason they gave is that the governments that cut the deal no longer exist. Mao, China is totally different now. The USSR is no more. The Council of Europe has been replaced by the European Union on a practical basis. And the era of Eisenhower and Lyndon Johnson's U.S. is a far cry from where we are today.
Well, if they're going to negate the agreement, though, Richard, what does this then mean for us? I mean, are they going to continue doing what they're doing, the genetic altering and the educating of those that they believe have already come here through reincarnation? Or are we in the midst of a war with them? What's going to happen?
No. There's a stopgap approach by the Star Nations, even though they now deem that the agreement is invalid. They're going to breach the gap by continuing to inform the major organizations about important information like their flight routes so that there won't be a collision between a UFO and a human airplane or spacecraft. And they will continue other things like the defense of Earth and communication and information sharing. And the difference, however, is since a September 29th formal hearing where circumstances permitted a fresh hearing out of the evidence that the cabal, the shadow government, if you will, has been engaged in a long series of criminal and unethical behavior, the Star Nations have now reached the conclusion that they are ethically allowed to no longer deal with these people. Before that, they felt that they could not discriminate. All Earthlings had to be treated equally. But now, having found these to be career criminals, they are now feel they're ethically free to discriminate against them. They've cut off any further contact, no more communication, no more information sharing. And any government or organization that they normally communicate with, they say, you clean those people out before we talk to you.
Well, Richard, sounds like it could be war. We'll be back in a moment because I want to see if we, as a world, continue to plan then to shoot down the craft. We'll be back. We're going to open up the phone lines with Richard Boylan at the top of the hour. Richard, I am concerned, though, that if this is happening and if they have basically negated the deal, what's going to prohibit some of these world leaders to pull out their arsenal and start shooting again at these craft?
Well, they've been doing it intermittently all along, so I guess in some ways Star Nations would say what else is new. But they're not disinterested in a vacuum here. They want to move ahead, and they have indicated that it's in their interest and in Earth's interest to move to a new understanding, a new agreement. They don't want a vacuum to last very long, and therefore, in the second update I've gotten from the Counselor for the Watchers, that they are now communicating directly with humans in various parts of the Earth in order to get ideas and feedback for what should go into an agreement. They're going around existing governments because they have determined that all the major governments are pretty heavily infiltrated by cabal types. There aren't very many pure, very large governments out there. So they're going to go directly to the people in a grassroots way and make contact with a huge number of people, get their ideas and input into what they would like to see in an agreement between Star Nations and Earth, and put all that together and then come to a new agreement. And they've indicated that since they do a bit of future viewing, if you will, that they can see where this is headed, that in the future there will be teams formed of humans and star visitors that will deal with various areas, and they gave a couple examples, actually. Teams would be for specific missions and objectives that are determined by the Star Nations and by the unified human race, species, if you will. For example, in the area of medical technology, this joint Star Nations human team would coordinate understanding of technology as shared by members of the Star Nations and ensure that medical technology advances are distributed fairly so that, you know, the handful of big countries don't get them all, that the medical advances are spread around so that various areas of the world get a chance to develop these and market them, and so that we don't have the situation as we've had in the past where U.S. and U.K. and a couple of the other big players make all the advances and everybody else is shut out. Another example they've given of a joint Star Nations human team is, after this new understanding gets going, is they've heard already from many, many people that they want the healing of Earth to get accelerated. Things are so bad, they want this to be a great high urgency acceleration item. And the arrangement is in, they have in mind is this, that as humans work to make needed changes to the environment to improve it, Star Nations will assist with energy work of their own. They call it energy stimulation. I don't have a very good human level explanation for it, but it'll basically be on a matching level. If humans get busy on a certain area, particularly the Zetas, who are some of the real worker force of the Star Nations, will contribute energy so that there will be a multiplication of efforts, and the healing of Earth and its environmental systems will accelerate much more rapidly than if humans had to do all the reversing of the damage by themselves.
So we're going to get some help, you're saying?
Yes. That's after this new understanding gets solidified, we're going to see those kinds of joint effort teams. One of their ethical principles is that they can't ride in like the 7th Cavalry and solve all our problems for us. They could, but it wouldn't be right. It's our planet, our culture. We need to take ownership and responsibility of doing it right. On the other hand, we've got serious difficulties and time is running out. And so they see it as ethically possible to operate in a cooperative way with us while still giving us major responsibility, room to take major responsibility in straightening up our society and healing our planet.
Richard, do you see the future of this relationship with them and us as people as getting better and better?
Yes. For a while there, over the last year or two, the discussions that I was getting from council members there was a lot of back and forth about, you know, the teeter-totter, but as more and more people start to make a difference in our society, and I think if you look around carefully and the listeners look around carefully, they'll see that there are people stepping forward to make changes, to speak out against abuses and corruption and bad government and environmental destruction and violence and war and so forth. They've determined that with some help and emphasis and push and communication and encouragement from them, we can turn this thing around in time, that we're not a lost cause. So they did a little future viewing, if you will. You know, military guys aren't the only people that do remote viewing.
All right, so they gave you a little glimpse of the future for us?
Yeah, they see these teams deployed and cooperatively working on various areas. We mentioned medical technology advances and environmental improvement, and there's many other areas we could get into. But this is going to be the future. I proposed to them that what we needed is a central repository for information, that a lot of the information that they've shared with us has gotten bottled up by these cabal types, and, you know, it's been classified, and the public can't get at it and benefit from it.
Did they ever describe, Richard, what their craft looks like? I'm curious. You know, with so many different star nations, I mean, are they all the same?
No. They have a great variety of craft. You know, you've seen the disc and the cigar shapes and the triangles and things that look like a top or an ice cream cone, circular, rhomboid, rectangular. They come in an even kind of diffuse energy, which I'm not clear if that's an ambient plasma field or whether the craft itself is kind of diffuse energy, but they come in a huge variety, just as on Earth not all our airplanes look the same.
What about the propulsion system for all the craft, even though they may look different? Is the propulsion system similar?
Well, I think there are some varieties, because these are different civilizations doing their thing. Anti-gravity is certainly the bottom line, but there are kinds of anti-gravity. There's electrogravitic, magnetogravitic, and then a kind of working with the strong force field and manipulating that Bob Lazar has talked about. And different craft give off different kinds of effects and signatures. Some of them seem to have some magnetic effects on Earth. Some seem to send out electronic signals. Some seem to put out a bit of a heat signature. Some seem to affect the electronics on nearby planes that fly by them, and others don't. So, you know, it seems that there's a variety of technologies that work, but the bottom line is they all keep the craft up in the air and it doesn't crash.
Why you, Richard? I mean, have you tried to answer that or resolve that for yourself? Why you, and how did this telepathic message come to you? I mean, did it just come in a dream? Did you get a funny feeling? What happened?
Well, I've been in dialogue with some people in a team that also worked on helping this hearing happen earlier that nailed the cabal for their misdeeds. So I've gotten a combination of telepathic messages from others and my own readings on that come together to put this message together, and I've gotten indications, as I say, from other associates and from Chief Golden Eagle as well, and the why me? I can't say in an absolutist sense. I do know that they've kind of tagged me as the representative for Earth to speak with their counselors, the High Council, if you will.
Well, you have not met them yet, though, have you?
Yes. I have met several of them.
Wait a minute. You're holding back on me now, Richard. When did this happen?
Well, I took a trip and was in their presence. They have not manifested in a physically separate way, but their energy field is there, and they've, in some cases, used a person to communicate through, use their voice box to communicate through. The thing here is that they said that Earth is about two ticks below the developmental level that they usually have as the minimum level of cultural and social development in a planetary society for them to bother with. We're about two ticks below that, but because there is a unique and kind of intriguing potential in humans, spiritual and even psychic giftedness, potentials and enough intelligence, that they felt that an exception would be made to the usual, well, pass them by and go on to some other planet that's worth saving and that isn't so far gone. And so Earth has not been accepted into the Star Nation's family of inhabited worlds yet, designating a human representative, myself at the moment. I hear that there are a couple of youngsters, a boy and a girl star kid, that are into their late grade school years and teens respectively, that are going to be council representatives down the line. But at the moment, I'm the kind of designated hitter for this communication. But Earth is had to be talked to itself, you know, to get this ball rolling of turning things around and give us hope and give us an understanding of what had to happen in the past over 40 years ago to get enough of a past clear to raise consciousness. We're at a whole different consciousness level on Earth now than we were in 1961. And now we're ready to engage with the Star Nations as visiting cultures. We've had enough of Star Trek and George Lucas and Steven Spielberg and all of these presentations. Everybody's kind of gotten used to the fact that, in fact, some of our scientists now are talking about planets out there that look like they're the right size to harbor life, and finding organic molecules in the atmosphere and all the ingredients for life. You know, the public consciousness has been softened up to the fact that the star visitors come out in public now. People aren't going to fall down and worship them as gods. They're not going to have any reason to fear them as invaders. They are going to understand that just as when we send explorers to visit a more primitive Indian tribe up the Amazon, they're still human beings. Cultures differ, but people can recognize basic humanity between each other and come to some understandings, and that when they come out in the open, we'll be able to engage on that level as well with a mutual respect and appreciation of intelligence and spirituality and develop consciousness between both societies.
Do you favor one Star Nation group over another? I mean, is there a one that you really take to your fancy?
You mean favorite race among them?
Yeah.
Well, that would be speaking to personal prejudice. I don't think there's any race that's intrinsically better than any other. They all subscribe to the 11 universal and 11 spiritual laws. I have kind of a special heart place for the praying mantis folks, having dealt with their energy and in working with the people who've had that, they have a very high ethereal, spiritual, fine, gentle, warm, loving energy that I particularly cherish, but I could say good things about many of the other races I've heard about or had some contact with, too, so I would want to play favorites here.
The Praying Mantis folks. They were the Praying Mantis type. That was the ones that came off the craft in the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Do you remember that scene?
Well,
kind of
those were kind
spindly.
Of Spielberg generics. They may have been an attempt to depict them.
And I'm talking about right in the beginning, not the small ones that came and got the occupants to go aboard.
Yeah,
I
suppose as much as Hollywood could do a job of it, you might say that, and they captured some of that ethereal kind of glowing, gentle quality. I'll give you that, yeah.
Well, I got to tell you, Richard, it's fascinating stuff. It's bizarre. I've known you for a number of years. This has never happened to you until recently.
No.
Man, what do you tell people who say, Richard, I think we're going to cart you away now? I mean, what do you tell those people, non-believers?
I'm a trained psychologist. I can write better admission orders than you can, but I have enough. I'm also a scientist, and I have enough independent corroboration. If we're just using the principles of jurisprudence and evidence that you get multiple corroborating sources, don't think that I don't pinch myself and have had questions about, you know, this. But when I get enough corroborating multiple sources, I have to say, well, we got something here. I think the other half of it is going to be over the next several years. People are going to have to wait a little bit, but as they see things start to come out in the open and governments reluctantly admitting, yeah, they're here, well, we've seen Guy Consolmagno do that for the Vatican in Harper's Monthly, this issue, we're going to see more governments doing that. And as we get an agreement, a new understanding going with the Star Nations, and they feel free and safe to come out in the open and start setting up these human Star Nation teams to take on different project areas and turn Earth around in a good direction, then I think it will speak for itself. Right now, you know, I'm just a person talking, and people make of it whatever they will.
Well, you've got great credentials, Richard. I got to tell you, you are. You're a scientist. It's an incredible story. You're an anthropologist, a PhD, behavioral scientist. I mean, this is amazing stuff. We'll be back in a moment. Next hour, your phone calls with our guest, Dr. Richard Boylan, on Coast to Coast AM.